What a Carve-Up by Jonathan Coe. Adapted by David Nobbs. Episode 8.
Fiona was dead. I thought I wished that I was dead. But very soon I would discover how desperately I still clung to life. How drab my existence seemed now in my dreary flat. How I wished I hadn't binned my video of What a Carve-Up. A caller. Incredible.
Hortensia.
I've heard the very sad news. We all feel so sorry for you.
Thank you. I guess it was very kind.
I meant to give you a little gift, but you left our party so swiftly. Please accept these now. Three of our very latest publications.
Oh, God. Thank you.
And how's your book coming on?
I haven't the heart to work on it just now, Hortensia. I mean, why should I care a fig about these wretched Winshaws? What difference does it make to me whether Lawrence betrayed Godfrey in 1942? Hortensia, did you ever get any clue or hint why Tabitha specifically asked for me to write the book?
I believe she did mumble something about making reparations.
But what for? It doesn't make sense.
Aren't you going to see what your books are? They might cheer you up.
Yes, of course. Impotence in Zebras, a companion volume to the groundbreaking Depression in Leopards.
A problem shared is a problem halved.
Thank you. I Was Celery. Thank you, yes. Well, there's nothing this time from the Reverend J.W. Pottage?
He'll never leave his wife. It was all talk.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
I had promised Fiona, sitting there by her deathbed, that I would make my peace with my mother. It wouldn't be easy. It's not pleasant to discover that your father wasn't the man you'd loved for half a lifetime, but a vacuum cleaner salesman with whom your mother had had a one-night stand one afternoon. But I had to do it.
And did you never meet after that one time, the day it happened?
Michael, I told you. I saw him once again about 10 years later. And so did you.
What do you mean, I saw him? I never saw him.
It was a weekday morning. I was in town doing some shopping. I went to Rackham's for a cup of tea. Actually, it was quite full. There was this gentleman sitting by himself, looking very gloomy, and suddenly I realised that it was him. He'd grown old. He'd grown dreadfully old. But I was sure it was him. I went over to his table and I said, Jim. It's Jim, isn't it? And then I said, it's me, Helen. And I could see it beginning to dawn on him.
My goodness.
Yeah, it wasn't much fun to talk to. Just a shadow of the man I'd met before. I told him about you. I thought perhaps it might mean something to him. And of course he'd no idea. He was completely flabbergasted. He asked me if he could come and see you.
What?
Well, to be honest, I didn't really like the idea, but I said, all right, but I'll have to ask my husband. I thought Ted would say no and that would be the end of it, but you know what it was like. It could never deny anybody. And he said yes. He thought it was the least the poor man deserved. So later that night, after you'd gone to bed, he came round to the house and I took him up to your bedroom and he stood and looked at you for about 5 minutes until you woke up and caught sight of him and started screaming fit to bring the roof down.
That was my dream. That was my nightmare. I dreamt that I was staring at my own face as an old man.
But you weren't. It was your father's.
Then what?
Then nothing. He left and none of us ever saw him again. Or heard from him. Well, except...
Yes?
He asked me if he could have a photograph. I can still remember how he described you. The only trace of myself I've managed to leave behind these last 20 years.
Oh, Mum.
Well, exactly. I didn't feel I could refuse him. I gave him the first one I could find. It was the one you always kept out, the one of you and Joan writing your books together.
So I never lost it. And when was that, Mum? When did it happen?
It was in the spring of 1961. Yeah, it must have been the spring, 1961.
And still the penny didn't drop. Another visitor in my little flat. Two in less than a week.
My name is Sloane. Everett Sloane, solicitor of the firm Sloane, Sloane, Quigley and Sloane. My card?
Well, come in.
Thank you.
Well, how can I help you, Mr. Sloane?
I'm here under instructions from my client, the late Mr. Mortimer Winshaw.
Late? You mean he's dead?
Mr. Winshaw passed away yesterday. Quite peacefully, if reports are to be believed. Your presence is requested at Winshaw Towers for the reading of the will.
But why? I only met him once. Surely he wouldn't have left me anything.
Naturally, I am not at liberty to discuss the contents of this document until all the concerned parties are gathered at Winshaw Towers.
As I attempted to lift the immense rusty knocker, the front door of Winshaw Towers swept open of its own accord. The huge hall was dimly lit, but I could see a bright light coming from under the door of the drawing room. I put my suitcase down and entered.
Well, hello again, Thomas.
It's that damned impudent writer fellow.
Mr. Pierce, I was wondering if you'd be able to come.
Tabitha looked just like Aunt Emily, the deranged old spinster in the film What a Carve-Up. Oh, I suppose that was inevitable.
I've been so looking forward to meeting you. Of course, I read your book. Your publishers have been sending me each chapter as soon as you delivered it. Read it, I must say, with the greatest interest.
Well, what the deuce do you think you're doing here?
I'm here for the same reasons as yourself. I'm here for the reading of the will, at your late uncle's invitation.
Poppycock, man. If you expect us to swallow a story like that...
I think you'll find Mr. Pierce is telling the truth. It was Mortimer Winshaw's specific request that he should be present this evening. We shall know why when I read the will.
Piles, the elderly retainer, led me slowly and asthmatically to my room.
The worst is yet to come.
Well, it certainly is quite a storm.
I wasn't referring to the weather, sir.
You weren't?
It's nearly 30 years since the family were last together in this house. Tragedy and murder visited us then, and so they will tonight. Let us count ourselves lucky if we wake tomorrow morning safe in our beds. This is your room. I'm afraid the lock has been broken for some time.
I washed and changed. At the top of the great staircase, I paused, standing for a moment between two rusting suits of armour. Was I ready to face the family? I patted my hair into shape, straightened my jacket, bent down to tie...
Look out!
The axe-wielding suit of armour was toppling slowly towards me. The blade embedded itself with a thud in the very spot where I'd been kneeling.
Did you see anyone? Somebody must have pushed it.
Talk, Will. Well, there's your assassin, Michael.
Phoebe! What are you doing here?
Have you forgotten? I'm Mortimer's nurse. Well, I was Mortimer's nurse, that is.
I, Mortimer Winshaw, pen these last words to the surviving members of my family in the certain knowledge that they will be present tonight. A warm welcome to my nephews, Thomas and Henry, to my niece, Dorothy, my nephew, Mark, and to Hilary and Roddy, the offspring, though it almost shames me to acknowledge it, of my own loins.
Bloody cheek.
I hope and pray that for one night at least, my dear sister Tabitha will be released from her outrageous confinement. I hope she will be joined by my loyal, gentle, and selfless nurse, Miss Phoebe Barton, and by the family's luckless biographer, Mr. Michael Pierce, who will make a complete record of the evening.
Disgraceful!
Please, Lord Winshaw. How can I be sure my six relatives will be here? Because I know that they will be unable to resist making the journey, merely in order to scrape whatever leavings they can from the rotten barrel which is all that remains of my estate.
Poetic old thing, wasn't he?
You're rather prone to mixing his metaphors. You scrape the bottom of barrels, don't you, Dorothy? And aren't they only meant to be rotten if there's a rotten apple in them?
If I may continue. There is only one more paragraph. And so it gives me no small pleasure to announce to these parasites, these leeches in human form, that all their hopes are in vain. Rebecca and I did not live wisely. We ran up vast debts. I bequeath these debts to the 6 aforementioned members of my family and instruct that they be shared out among them equally. It only remains for me to wish that you all pass a safe and pleasant evening together.
Legally, you can't get away with that. We're under no obligation to bail him out with his creditors.
That's hardly the point, Mark. The point, I suppose, was to have a damn good joke at our expense, and in that respect, I'd say he succeeded rather well.
Well, I don't know about anybody else, but I could do with some supper.
Supper at Winshaw Towers that night was not a cheerful meal, and it grew less cheerful fairly rapidly.
Where's Henry?
He was up in Nurse Gannett's old room, glued to the television. He hopes the war with Iraq will start tonight.
Where's Nurse Gannett's room? I've forgotten.
I'll go, Dorothy. I'll get him.
I hadn't even noticed he wasn't here. How that would hurt his vanity if he knew.
Don't worry, Thomas. I won't be able to resist the temptation of telling him.
I'm going to see if Phoebe's all right. I don't like the thought of her wandering alone in this sinister house at night. What is it?
I came in. Couldn't see anybody. Switched the TV off, because Jeremy Paxman irritates me. And then I saw it. That stream of blood running down the side of the sofa.
Oh, my God. Hello? We found him!
What's happened?
Henry's dead.
Stabbed in the back. How appropriate. Does this mean Mrs. Thatcher is somewhere in the house?
Are we just going to leave him like that?
I'll clean him up a bit, if you like.
As Dan help you, I've had a lot of experience with carcasses.
The rest of us tried to enjoy our spotted dick.
So, who killed him?
Probably an escaped lunatic. Hidden the boot of the car, bringing Tabitha from the hospital.
That's impossible. I had my knitting in there.
It could have been you, Thomas. Or were you too busy phoning your friend Saddam, helping him out with a last-minute order?
You impudent swine. Take that back.
He couldn't have phoned. I tried to phone the police. The wires have been cut.
I'll get my cell phone, Ronnie. I left it in the billiard room.
Well, come on, then. Who do we really think killed Henry?
Well, any of us could have. Nobody's seen him since the will was read. Between then and supper, we were all of us alone at one time or another. La, 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 I don't rule anybody out.
Oh, Tabitha, please spare us.
Not entering into the party spirit. Oh, dear.
Where's Piles? I want some port with this dreadful Stilton.
You know, there was something strange about those suits of armour at the top of the stairs. Something about them has changed.
You're all getting over-imaginative.
What was that?
Keep your nerve, everybody.
I'm going to have a look at that suit of armour.
Everything seemed in the same position, and yet...
What is it now?
In the billiard room. Mark. Slumped against the wall. He's been... mutilated. The axe from the armour is on the billiard table, and protruding hideously from the 2 pockets of the bulk end, his severed limbs. And on the wall, in blood, 4 words, a farewell to arms.
Thank you. Well, the important thing is we all remain calm and civilised. Clearly, there's a madman loose in the house.
You haven't got it, have you? Do you remember your first words, Hilary, when you saw that Henry had been stabbed in the back? How appropriate. What did you mean, exactly?
Well, we all know that personal loyalty wasn't the most obvious distinguishing feature of Henry's political career.
Quite. He was a backstabber. And as for Mark, we needn't have any illusions about what he was up to in the Middle East. Hence, presumably, the message on the wall above his body.
Your theory being that each of us is on the verge of being killed in a manner appropriate, as it were, to our professional activities.
Correct.
You couldn't be drawing attention away from yourself, could you? We all know exactly what you think of us. It wouldn't surprise me if you'd lured us all here as part of some insane scheme of your own.
Lured you here? How could I have done that? You're not accusing me of Mortimer's death as well, are you?
Well, perhaps that's where Miss Barton comes in.
Yes, she has a grudge against the family. She and Pierce go upstairs to look for Henry. 5 minutes later, he's dead. That makes them both prime suspects to me.
The wind continued to rage, and so did their arguments. In the end, they tied Phoebe and me up with thick ropes from the dining room curtains. A huge beech tree fell and completely blocked the drive.
My God.
I hope Dorothy wasn't trying to get away. Has anyone seen her?
Not for a while.
Do try to look on the bright side, everybody. Things could easily be worse.
Worse, Auntie? We're trapped in an isolated house with a homicidal maniac, in the middle of a thunderstorm, the phones have been cut, the drive's blocked, two of us have been killed, and another's gone missing. How could things possibly be worse?
It was at that moment that the lights went out.
God, what's happened?
It must be a fuse. I'll see to it at once. I know this house like the back of my hand. Jim!
Oh!
Sorry.
La, 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 la.
For God's sake, Auntie, who can knit in the dark? Stop singing those infuriating songs.
Shh! Who's that moving about? Who's there? Come on, speak up.
Fear can play strange tricks.
I'm not afraid.
You're scared witless, old girl. I can always tell when you're upset. You start messing around with the grapes.
Grapes? What are you on about?
You start peeling them, taking the skins off. You were doing it before the lights went off. I've got my hand in the bowl. There's no skin on this one. Jesus Christ, what is it? It's vile!
Just then, the lights came back on. Roddy had been eating... God, I can hardly... an eye. Right in the middle of the fruit bowl, the other bloodshot eye of Thomas Winshaw, lifelong voyeur, was fixed forever in its last, unblinking, lifeless gaze. Roddy passed out.
He always was a squeamish little thing. We better get him to bed.
I'll help if you untie me.
Untie you? You must be joking.
Thomas was in here and alive when we were tied up. I think you've established our innocence.
I suppose so.
She untied us with bad grace. We put Roddy to bed and joined Tabitha in the drawing room.
Still no sign of Dorothy.
The only person I've seen is your father. He stopped by a few minutes ago. We had a lovely little chat.
Auntie, Mortimer isn't with us anymore. He died the day before yesterday.
I think you must be quite mistaken, dear. I'm sure it was Morty. I didn't think he was looking his best. He was very tired and out of breath, and he did have blood all over his clothes, now I come to think of it. But he wasn't dead.
Loony alert. The old bit is completely lost at this time.
Well, is it just possible she's telling the truth? Did anybody actually see Mortimer die?
I didn't. I'd gone back home for a couple of days.
Your idea?
His, actually. Told me I was looking a bit under the weather and insisted I took a break.
Did you see him dead, Piles?
No. Dr. Quince informed me that the master had passed away.
But my father couldn't be running around killing people. He was confined to a wheelchair, for God's sake.
That was the impression he liked to give. But I saw him get up and walk once or twice when he thought nobody was looking.
It's the only possible solution. I've known it all along.
How can you say that?
It's what happens in the film What a Carnup.
There is one way of finding out whether Morty's dead. You could go down to the crypt and see if his body's in his coffin.
That's the most sensible thing you've said for 30 years, Tabitha. I will.
I'm coming too.
You're very like him, you know, Michael. You have the same eyes. Exactly the same eyes.
Does anyone know what she's talking about? I must follow Hillary. Nobody in this house should go anywhere on their own anymore.
Hillary was striding through the rain to the family chapel. Heartless and selfish she might have been, but I have to admit, she was brave. I could hardly keep up. We descended the steps in darkness, but there was a thin band of light under the door. Hillary stepped into the crypt first. As she opened the door, there was a whir above her head. A bulky parcel was crashing down on the end of a rope. The parcel was compounded of newspapers. All the newspapers for which she had written a column during the last 6 years. She was crushed to death by the weight of her own opinions. It was almost beautiful. Oh, and the coffin was empty. I hunted for Dorothy in vain. Roddy was sleeping like a child. There was no more to be done. I made my way sleepily to my room.
What are you doing in my room?
This isn't your room!
Huh? Oh, no. No, 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 of course not. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't seem to get the hang of this place at all. I didn't mean to disturb you.
That's all right. Stay a moment.
I stayed a moment, Then another moment. I told her all about Fiona. How many of the Winshaws had contributed to the death of the man I'd thought to be my father. I cried in her arms.
Michael, why don't you stay here tonight? I don't fancy spending the night alone, and we'd be company for each other.
More than once I'd made wonderful love to a beautiful woman and woken up to find it was a dream. That night I dreamt it and woke up to find it was real. Come and live with me in London.
Michael!
I'm serious.
We're in no condition to make plans at the moment, Michael. Slow down a bit.
Yes, you're... Phoebe, I've just realised. Oh, I've been so very slow. It's only just dawned on me why Tabitha chose me.
What?
She said I had his eyes. There's only one person she could have been talking of. Tabitha was right, Phoebe. Lawrence did tip the Germans off about Godfrey's mission, and that's why he got shot down. But there was a co-pilot who didn't get killed. He drifted around under different names. John Farringdon was one of them. Jim Fenchurch was another.
So?
I'm his son. I'm his son, Phoebe. I'm going to ask Tabitha about it right now. I think she's been playing a very clever game. Unless I'm very much mistaken, she's as sane as I am.
You've got there at last, Michael, though it did take you longer than I had hoped.
How did you trace me?
Mr. Onyx found John Farringdon, your father. But after John was killed by Lawrence, Mr. Onyx gave me all the documents that John possessed concerning you. A photograph of you as an 8-year-old with a little girl.
Yes.
And there was a story you'd written as a child. You were a writer. It was all too perfect. I knew you'd be short of money. All writers are short of money. I'd make financial reparations to you, and the world would discover the truth about my dreadful family.
That note of Lawrence's. Biscuit, cheese, celery. The publishers you asked to employ me have given me a book called I Was Celery. It's the story of a double agent. Biscuit, cheese and celery were names for double agents.
Yes, Lawrence was a double agent. The family have built their spurious reputations on patriotism. It'll be a fatal blow to them when it's revealed that Lawrence was a traitor. A war then and a war now. We invaded Iraq last night.
That night in the other war, during which you heard German voices from Lawrence's bedroom and he emerged from the billiard room...
Easily explained. A secret passage links it to his bedroom. The one young Roderick's in.
Oh, my God. Ah, Phoebe, we must get into Roddy's room.
It's too late, I have.
Huh? Oh, good Lord. Painted to death. Just like Shirley Eaton in Goldfinger. Oh, Mortimer doesn't miss a trick, does he? Phoebe went to get help. When she came back, she had a shock. I disappeared. When we met up again on the terrace, it was morning, and the sun was shining.
Where on earth have you been?
Oh, Phoebe, yet again, it was just like what a carve-up. The mirror in Roddy's room opens on a hinge, and there's a hole in the wall behind it. I stepped in. The mirror swung shut. I felt my way down a long passage. It led to a dimly lit war room.
God.
It's probably stuffed with evidence of Lawrence's perfidy, but I didn't feel I had time. I needed to see if I could find Dorothy, maybe still save her. I passed the billiard room, but the passage went on down. I heard a faint, ominous noise.
Oh, my God. Dorothy.
Dorothy. Trussed up neatly and tied by the ankles to a meat hook screwed into one of the beams of this old, disused cellar. And the plip, plip, plip of her blood into a bucket. And sitting there on a three-legged stool, watching her, Mortimer.
Is she dead?
I think so. It's taken longer than I thought.
Oh, what a horrible way to die.
Mr. Pierce, I hope you aren't going to expend any sympathy on members of my family. They don't deserve it. I've led a wasted life. I was born into money, and although, unlike the others, I didn't do much harm, I was too selfish to want to do any good with it. But I thought I might redeem myself slightly by doing mankind a small favour before I died, ridding the world of a handful of vermin. It was you who finally persuaded me.
Me?
That book of yours. gave me the idea and suggested one or two possible approaches.
As he spoke, he was toying with a large syringe in his right hand.
I'm so tired, Michael, ever since my wife died. I'd so like to sleep, Michael. You will help me, won't you? I don't think I have the strength left in my fingers anymore. Out of the kindness of your heart, please. They send dogs to sleep, don't they? When they're old and sick.
I thought, put like that, it didn't sound too bad. So...
Oh, Michael.
I left Phoebe then and recorded my chapter about that incredible night. Then I gave the tape to her. After all, you can't be too careful. I was going home in Hillary's seaplane. Well, she wouldn't be using it.
Why are you giving me this tape, Michael?
I don't know. Just in case anything happens. I mean, look at my pilot. He looks about 90. I can't even see his face behind those ridiculous goggles. But I'm sure I'll be okay. You will come and see me in London, won't you?
Of course. As soon as I can.
I waved goodbye. Then I went for some things I'd left in Nurse Gannett's room. A stream of blood was running down the side of the sofa. It was a rerun of last night. Had I gone mad? No. I wasn't the mad one. The body I saw lying there that morning was Hillary's pilot. And only one person could have killed him. Tabitha. I could paint the seaplane, plummeting towards a bare, ploughed winter field near North Allerton. Piloted by Tabitha, who turned out to be as mad as a hatter after all. Perhaps one day I will.
What a Carve-Up starred Robert Bathurst as Michael, with Gus Brown as Roddy and Sloane, Flaminia Cinque as Hortensia and Tabitha, Alan Davis as Mark, Rebecca Front as Hillary, Charlie Hickson as Mortimer, Geraldine McNulty as Dorothy and Michael's mum, Jeffrey Palmer as Thomas, Lucy Punch as Phoebe, and Jeff Rawl as Henry and Piles. What a Carve-Up was produced by Lucy Armitage for Tiger Aspect Productions.